The Irish Times Inside Business podcast in association with Davy. It's amazing what you discover when you really listen.
Hello and welcome to Inside Business, a podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Laura Slattery, and on today's show, consumer sentiment has understandably taken a deep knock in 2020. But does that mean our Christmas spending will be subdued this year? Amid calls for those who can afford to spend to support the economy through the crisis, we'll be looking at why consumers might be either keen to treat themselves or nervous about doing so, and how advertisers are responding to the fragile mood. And later, we'll be talking to Pruncheas Somani about what stock markets expect from next Tuesday's US presidential election and which outcome investors might prefer. But first, consumer sentiment tumbled again in October, with the outlook for household finances and jobs waning even ahead of the government's decision to move to level 5. So what happens next? Will the reopening of shops coincide with a bounce in confidence and release of pent-up demand, or will the gloom linger? I'm joined by Austin Hughes, Chief Economist of KBC Bank Ireland, and Charlie Stoney, Chief Executive of the Institute of Advertising Practitioners in Ireland, better known as IAPI. Austin, I'll come to you first. The Consumer Sentiment Index published by KBC Bank Ireland, it's been reflecting the shock and fear that most of us have felt this year. But what does the latest survey tell us about how we're feeling?
The October drop in consumer sentiment certainly isn't a surprise. Irish consumers are particularly nervous about the outlook for jobs and for incomes over the coming year. And of course, the uncertainty around the pandemic is like nothing they've ever faced before. So it's not surprising, but it does warn us that perhaps consumers who are able to spend will be less willing to spend. Now, I do think we're already seeing a bounce back in consumer spending. Certainly, we've seen very strong retail sales numbers since the first lockdown eased, and the September numbers show really dramatic increases. You know, furniture sales up 30%, electrical sales up 30%. We're seeing in general consumer spending and at retailers up by 90% since the low point in April. But I don't think that's going to last. I think what consumer sentiment is telling us is that consumers are acutely aware of the downside risks to their income and employment prospects, and they will be very wary about spending. So consumer spending will be down, but I don't think we should rule it entirely out. I do think we will see a Christmas bounce.
So in September, you described the pattern of sentiment as being a bit of a zigzag since March, but obviously it was down again in October, and that was ahead of the move to level 5. Would you expect it to sink lower in November before rising maybe by the end of the year?
I think we're going to see consumer sentiment certainly fall sharply in November, probably because people are concerned about the impact of restrictions. And of course, we're seeing a global increase, a renewed surge in the virus. The reality, of course, is that the current lapse in confidence in Ireland isn't unique to this country. Consumers are probably seeing a more significant pullback in sentiment and confidence because we've been through a crisis relatively recently. Many people are still scarred financially, psychologically from the last crisis. And we know what happens when things can be awful. So to that extent, sentiment is poorer here than maybe in other countries. But it has to be emphasized that government support measures mean that there isn't the same sort of collapse in spending power that we've seen in previous, you know, really sharp downturns.
So there is still that spending power there, but there is obviously, you know, reluctance maybe on the part of some consumers to really go mad at the moment because they don't know what's going to happen next year.
Yeah, I think, remember, the spending power is there for now, but of course these government supports are temporary. And what we saw in the last crisis was concerns around the housing market develop in 2007, 2008, but bottom really wasn't hit in terms of the economy until 2010, 2011, jobs 2012. So there's a sense that consumers may feel they have the spending power now, but perhaps it won't be there next year. And that's the reality. It's not a case that consumers feel that November is going to be awful for them. It's more a case of 2021 and maybe 2022 being a lot poorer than they previously envisaged.
Coming to you now, Charlie, when I was talking to advertisers just earlier this month, they reported the mood as bullish, at least compared to March. But is that still the feeling now? Do you think we've moved into a second lockdown, or, you know, has there been a kind of a note of negativity creeping back in?
Hi, Laura. Lovely to be here. Thanks for this. I think to answer your question, I think the first week after the announcement, I think everyone was in a state of, oh, God, here we go again. You know, because obviously advertisers, you know, we're all consumers. We're all part of the Irish population. And then having talked to, you know, my our 55 odd agency members and a lot of clients and marketeers over the last few weeks, couple of weeks, there seems to be an acknowledgement that whilst at the very beginning there was a sort of pullback from spending and a pullback from any brand positioning, I think the lessons learned over the first lockdown period was that if your brand isn't communicating and it isn't communicating in the right way, that you are losing, you're losing the race and you're losing out to competitors. And I think we've learned a hell of a lot over the last few months. Agencies and client marketeers have worked really closely together to produce some extraordinary consumer-facing, I suppose what I would call societal campaigns, for want of a better word. And I don't just mean the ads that talked about unprecedented times, because I think if we saw one more of those by the end of March, I think we might have thrown the telly out the window. But just the kind of sheer insights that we've been able to derive and the amount and the volume of research that we've seen. And, you know, members like MCCP, Core Research, Dentsu Research, the other big media groups, OMG and IPG, and then the likes of, you know, Folk, Wunderman Thompson over here, relying on their network to bring insights from around the world, BBDO doing the same. And then, you know, Rothker and Accenture providing that as well through their network. I think we've got a really good handle on what generally consumers and the population need. I think probably the most solid piece of research done in the last two to three weeks has been done by Core Research, when they looked at how people were going to spend around Christmas and their Christmas expectations. And I think overall, I think the spend is actually relatively consistent with last year, or at least the planned spend is, which is really interesting. And that was taken in the last few weeks. So some of it was post the level five restrictions. Now, the big talking point at the moment is, have we handed Christmas to Amazon? You know, and I think not that, you know, I'm dissing multinationals, because obviously Ireland has done incredibly well by them. But what we've also got to consider is the huge online, I suppose, ask of Irish consumers to support online Irish retailers. And that is the big debate going on at the moment. You know, have we handed Christmas over to the international online retailers? Because frugality is definitely there, you know, and people will be looking for bargains. And my gut and my opinion probably is that the Irish retail support Ireland is going to be taken up by those with more money, the middle classes and the sort of older generation. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could all support Irish retailers? But then again, what is an Irish online retailer? Just by putting a .ie at the end of it doesn't mean it's creating jobs and helping people within the island of Ireland, as you know too well. So that's a dilemma facing everybody. But certainly, the average Christmas budget, according to this Core research, is about $1,350. The average budget for gifts is just over $200. So it's quite telling, and it's looking quite buoyant.
And do you think advertisers will sense that there is an appetite amongst consumers to treat themselves in perhaps one of the few ways that they can this year? You know, there's very few holidays or travel of any kind, really.
But, you know, you can buy, you know, a new TV for your home. And there's a lot of in-home purchases. Is that something that they can, you know, target a little bit? Or, you know, is there sort of a sensitivity about doing that?
I think so. I mean, I think young adults, so under 40 with few or no children, will spend the least, which is actually probably the cohort that do the most traveling and the most sort of high-end purchases. So they're not looking to necessarily spend this Christmas. But then when you look at the spending pattern over what we call Black Friday, which has probably turned into that whole of the last week in November, the expectation is that people will spend very highly during that purchase. Now, traditionally, Black Friday was all about self-gifting. So that's that cohort you're talking about. And what we're predicting now is that, yes, there will still be an element of self-gifting and treating. So we'll probably see a spike there. But we're assuming that Black Friday will be treated as a Christmas shop too. So gifting for others will come into play very much there. The most likely items bought will be the sort of smaller, the books, the gifts, the entertainment items. Whereas, you know, obviously the household goods, the groceries, the alcohol is looking to be bought whilst in store. I mean, assuming everything's going to get back online. There's no doubt Christmas is earlier this year. I mean, all you had to do was look at the queues for the big shopping centres all around the country when we assumed level 5 would be announced by the government that weekend. I can't remember the date now. It seems to be, on the one hand, months ago, and on the other hand, yesterday. But yeah, I mean, people are definitely stocking up for Christmas early this year.
Yeah, I mean, there is a kind of a sense, isn't there, that perhaps when the pent-up demand is released, it might compensate, at least in part, for the period where the non-essential shops are closed. I suppose it'll be interesting to see if that can be even managed come December.
The issue with that, Laura, and I'll just say one shout out to local retailers here, that they are perceived by consumers as the most trusted in this whole myriad of retailers, and even more trusted than, you know, things like the sort of the banks and the big online grocery stores. So what would be wonderful to see is a massive pent-up spend that will happen locally when the level 5 restrictions are lifted.
And of course, like, advertisers will often, you know, make the point that at times when there are higher levels of marketing investment by advertisers, it itself spurs on consumer spending. Does that hold true, do you think, maybe for this crisis, or is it just that we've never encountered this sort of situation before?
Oh, definitely it holds true. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, some of the winners who've been advertising consistently and very well, but in the right way. So I think when you look at what Three Islands have done, if you look at what En Poste have done, if you look at, you know, Vodafone, again, another mobile company, if you look at Lidl and even Tesco, that they're all consistently advertising with emotion and with entertainment very authentically, in the way that everybody always should advertise. And I guess, you know, running, for me, seeing this industry come alive during this crisis has been so rewarding, because creativity has never been better in this country. And I'm not saying that it wasn't good before, but I think we as an industry excel when we are looked to by our clients to, I suppose, dig them out or help them with a problem. And I think we have turned things around for the vast majority of businesses here, albeit, you know, there are exceptions like, you know, the beleaguered travel and hospitality industry that there's really very little we can do about, except for provide those online experiences and turn them into virtual experiences, which is becoming more and more important for everybody, really. As we look to 2021 and see no real respite from the yo-yoing of restriction and, you know, lifting of restrictions and then restrictions again, I think we'll see this happen throughout 2021, in my opinion. I'm sorry, that is prefaced with my opinion.
Austin, just on that point that Charlie makes about, you know, the potential for further lockdowns, is that, would that have a kind of a fatal blow to the consumer mood, do you think? Is there a sense of, you know, this time the gloom is bad enough, but if this keeps on happening, it might never recover?
Fatal may be too strong a word, but I do think it can permanently depress probably the growth path for consumer spending. The reality, as we were saying, is that, you know, spending power hasn't been dented at the macro level. Of course, you know, for individuals running businesses or who've lost jobs, they've suffered a huge hit in many instances, but at the macro level, government supports have kept spending power in place. So it's more a case of whether these start to be unwound. The reality, of course, is if you remember back to the previous crisis, the housing downturn was the first step, but the other shoe to drop was the austerity element. And that's the concern that people already probably have, that they're wondering, well, when will there be a nasty payback, a bill that will come in a year's time that will see higher income taxes, less income growth out of this. So I do think there's the scope for spending to remain reasonably solid in the short in the short term. There undoubtedly is an element of pent-up demand, and we're seeing also people nesting and paying more attention to their home, its furnishings, its hardware, it's those sort of elements. I do think there will also be a little bit of care about conspicuous consumption. People will be probably wary of spending something that is demonstrably sort of lavish. But, you know, you should have a decent Christmas this time round. The real worry that people have is that, coupled with maybe Brexit concerns, you know, when we get to the payback for this current pandemic, that things then will take on a different sort of light. And it's in those circumstances where the idea of rolling lockdowns become even more troublesome. We can get through this, you know, a once-off sort of adjustment. But I think if we're looking at this through 2021 as a regular feature of economic and social life, then it becomes much more difficult to stay the course, both in terms of spending power and probably in terms of the resolve. So both the ability and the willingness to spend could be much more severely dented then if we don't have measures that mean that the virus is no longer the threat it appears at the moment.
And when people sometimes say on, you know, radio shows or TV that people who can spend should spend, that it's the patriotic thing to do, that it helps out retailers, that if they can help out small Irish retailers by finding their websites even during this period of lockdown, has that ever had a proven effect that, you know, go and spend and then people do?
I can answer that, actually, because I know MCCP are doing focus groups on a weekly basis and have done since the beginning. And what they're saying at the moment, because of the list that actually the Irish Times issued about the top Irish online retailers, and then it became 200. And I think it's now at, I don't know the number, but I think it's over 300 now, isn't it? But what their research is showing is that there is a groundswell to support more local businesses across all the age cohorts, and those are Irish businesses. They do need to balance, you know, getting kids what they want to make up for a different Christmas. You know, so families with younger Santa age kids will probably go abroad, but not abroad, but go onto international sites and get the best bargain. But they really want to support the Irish and plan and buy meaningful gifts that in a more, I suppose, mindful way than before. What consumers are dreading is any ads that talk about lockdown, COVID, ram home the situation we're in. What they're looking for is entertainment, because they want Christmas to be a reprieve. So that's their view of Christmas ads, potentially turning them off.
Austin, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I do think that the ads have the scope to influence where people spend their money and maybe when, the particular time they spend their money. I'm not so sure that it's how much they spend. I think people are still looking to the uncertainty around the pandemic, around the potential bill that comes up later on. So I think that will make people more cautious. This idea of what Keynes back, you know, nearly 100 years ago talked, the paradox of thrift, still remains a very important element, that consumers are wary. It is a case, I do think Christmas will be a break, because I think there is that sense, as Charlie has said, that, you know, people will want this sort of, at some stage, the gloom to lift, and this little break. And it really goes back to the very ancient idea of this midwinter festival that we celebrate, this idea that we need some relief from the gloom. And I do think that will come towards solid spending this year. I think the risks are more around the viability of business and the trajectory of spending through 2021.
Okay, well, I know coming up to Christmas, I'm looking forward to some self-gifting. Whether that's sensible or not, I'm not sure. But thanks very much for now. Austin Hughes from KBC Bank Ireland and Charlie Stoney from IAPI. Thank you. Coming up, Trump versus Biden, The Wall Street View.
At Davy, we know your well-being should be financial as well as personal. And now when it's a little more challenging, if you're in a position where you have a pension, it's never been more important to get active. So talk to one of our trusted advisors now, and we can help you find a solution for your pension needs. A solution that could help you feel better about your financial future. Let's start the conversation. Call us today or search Davy. Davy. It's not just business, it's personal. Janie Davy, trading as Davy, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. We take our responsibilities personally.
Now, with 6 days to go until the US election, Joe Biden is ahead of Donald Trump in the polls, and he's also the bookies' favourite. But how would the so-called blue wave victory go down on global stock markets? Here to discuss this is Prunshius O'Mahony, who writes the Stock Take column for the Irish Times every Tuesday. Hello, Prunshius.
Hi, Laura.
So, Trump or Biden, who would the markets like to see?
Well, I think what markets are most concerned about at the moment is the idea of a contested election, because Trump has obviously been making various noises about not accepting the result. And that kind of talk has made investors very nervous. The latest Bank of America Merrill Lynch monthly fund manager survey found that 74% thought that the idea of a contested election was the biggest risk. Now, 14% thought that a blue wave was the biggest risk. So clearly, the contested election is very much what's on investors' minds. In relation to what is investors' preferences, there was a recent UBS survey which found that in America, people are pretty much split 50-50, big investors. Outside of America, global investors appear to have a preference for Joe Biden. And then there was also a Price Waterhouse survey which found that executives were worried that the Democrats would raise taxes, but they believe Trump then would be worse on US-China relations, immigration, foreign policy. So basically what's happened is that investors appear to have become more comfortable over time with the idea of a blue wave. I mean, you might recall last year now, there was a lot of talk that the Democrats were kind of had become more left-leaning, and a lot of big investors were nervous, we'll say, when Elizabeth Warren was doing well in the polls. And then this year, of course, Bernie Sanders was the one stage of the front runner. Now, what was tending to happen there was that the better Sanders was doing in the polls, the more stock markets were actually rising, because essentially they didn't believe that Sanders was had much chance of winning. So they thought that if Sanders became the nominee, that a Trump victory was much more likely, you know? So as a result, as I say, there was this kind of constant chatter that the Democrats, that Trump was good for stocks and the Democrats not so good for stocks. But that narrative has very much changed recently, where Goldman Sachs and other investment banks have been talking about the positive implications that might come from a blue wave. In particular, the idea of substantial fiscal stimulus and a $2 to $3 trillion fiscal package. There's also, you know, like say Moody's Analytics have estimated that Biden's economic proposals would create about 7 million more jobs than Trump's. Now, what's kind of interesting about that is that Moody's economist is Mark Zandi, who advised the Republican candidate, John McCain, in the 2008 election. So the fact that economists like Zandi want the Democrats to not only win the presidency, but both houses of Congress, shows that the old fears about a blue wave have well and truly disappeared. And I think the consensus is at this stage that markets would probably welcome a blue wave. If, on the other hand, Biden wins the election, but the Republicans retain control over the Senate, then the Democrats would obviously find it much more difficult to get through their fiscal stimulus package. But with both candidates, investors would see kind of pros and cons to both. I mean, investors like the idea of tax cuts and deregulation with Trump. They're not too keen, obviously, on his impulsivity, and they're keen on as I say, the idea of fiscal stimulus from the Democrats.
It's kind of a situation where the, you know, the last thing they want, as you say, is an impasse of any kind, whether that's Donald Trump sitting in the White House whilst a legal case takes place over the outcome of the election, or an impasse on the fate of the fiscal stimulus. It does seem on a day-to-day basis at the moment that progress or lack of progress on the fiscal stimulus is what's moving markets in the US in particular. Is there kind of a sense that, you know, something will happen there eventually? There will be some fiscal stimulus, you know, regardless of whether it's a Biden or Trump victory.
Yeah, I think you can assume that, because Trump himself has made lots of noises about, you know, being in favor of a $2 trillion fiscal stimulus package. So you would have to assume that, you know, eventually some sort of package is going to get through. But obviously, if the Democrats retain, or if they gain a majority in Congress and the Senate, as well as the presidency, then that becomes much more likely.
And of course, I mean, just over, you know, longer term period, you mentioned it also there that, you know, Trump's trade war with China, those tensions have been sort of hanging over stock markets for years now. There is a sense maybe that, you know, although investors wouldn't traditionally be fans of the left, that Donald Trump's politics don't necessarily completely suit them either.
No, there's no doubt about that. I mean, as I say, everyone sees Trump as very impulsive, and, you know, executives aren't keen on his on the anti-democratic soundings coming from him. I mean, many investors, I think it's fair to say, would view Trump as a bit of a dangerous fool, but they were keen enough maybe to, when they were getting the lower corporate tax rates and the like from him. But certainly on a day-to-day basis, Trump is not a conventional politician and not a conventional president. Investors would very much know what they're getting with someone like Joe Biden, whereas there's always the chance for, I think, greater kind of geopolitical tensions and the like with Trump. Now, as I say, markets have learned to ignore a lot of the tweeting over the last 4 years. You know, there's something every week with him. But at this stage, I think most analysts appear to be, you know, preferring the idea of stability under Biden rather than 4 more years of Trump.
In a way, he's the sensible conservative choice rather than the renegade president.
Well, even besides that, traditionally stocks over the last century have actually done better under Democrat administrations. There's a kind of perception that the Republicans are pro-business and better for stock markets. So as a result, markets tend to react negatively and immediately after election result if the Democrats win. But, you know, over the long term, as I say, the returns have actually been better under the Democrat administrations. Now, correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation there, because all kinds of things can influence how stocks do under a particular administration. As a general rule, when stocks are cheap, long-term returns tend to be better. And when stocks are expensive, long-term returns tend to be worse. So, you know, stock markets did very poorly under George W. Bush's 8 years. But you could argue that the main reason for that was that stocks were extremely expensive following the dot-com bubble in the late 90s. Similarly, when Obama took over,
Market has just suffered a major financial crash, etc. So stocks were cheaper than they had been for generations. So there's actually, you can very much argue that while we're talking about it at the moment, that the impact of who wins the presidency isn't really that crucial. It seems crucial at this time of year, but for long-term investors, you know, most advisors would say, look, tune it out and don't worry about the day-to-day movements. You know, 10, 20, 30 years from now, stock markets, they're not, a president's impact on stock markets isn't as great as investors sometimes might think.
I mean, this time 4 years ago, investors like everybody else, you know, they were surprised by Donald Trump's victory. Do you think this time, you know, is there a capacity for surprise at the result, or do they think it's pretty? Are they keeping an open mind? Is what I'm trying to say about the outcome.
I think they are keeping an open mind. I think the polls have consistently shown a very strong lead for Biden. Now, if you look at the polling expert Nate Silver, his 538 website, he estimates Biden's chances of winning the Electoral College to be 89%. The Economist has a model which gives Biden a 96% chance. Whereas if you look at the betting odds, then they're not nearly as certain. They're estimating Biden's chances of victory at about 65%. So there's a bit of a disconnect there. I think people are suspicious of the polls because Hillary Clinton was widely expected to win in 2016. And as we all know, she didn't. But that said, I think there's a danger that investors might now be maybe a bit too cautious about the polls. Like, for one thing, the polls weren't as wrong in 2016 as people sometimes think. They predicted that Hillary Clinton, at the very end, they were predicting that she was ahead by about 3%. Now, she did win the popular vote by 3 million votes, so it was by about 2%. There were some polling failures in some of the state polls, but the pollsters have tried to correct for that. And as I say, Biden's lead has been much more stable than Hillary Clinton's lead was at this time in 2016. Like, at this time in 2016, there was kind of some momentum towards Trump. And then you might recall that the FBI announced that investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, and, you know, that resulted in more momentum. Whereas Biden, it's tightened a little bit recently, but the average poll has Biden ahead by 8%. Now, at one stage it was 11%, but 8% is still a very sizable lead. So Hillary Clinton's lead, as I say, Hillary Clinton wasn't ever popular with at least half of America. Biden is perceived as a more likable politician, and I would be more inclined to side with, we'll say, Nate Silver's view that the Biden victory is extremely likely, as opposed to a lot of people are still putting money on Trump and thinking, well, the polls are wrong in 2016. They're probably wrong again. But in 2016, something unlikely happened. Just because something unlikely happened in 2016 doesn't mean that something unlikely automatically happens in 2020. So I think markets have been a bit reluctant to fully price in a Biden victory. But there's, as a result, if you do get a Biden victory, you could see a certain movement in stock markets. But as I say, I think a Biden victory is, it looks very likely right now. So we'll have to wait and see. But it's certainly looking good for Biden at the moment.
On that cliffhanger, thanks very much, Prunchius. That's it for this week's Inside Business. My thanks again to Austin Hughes, Charlie Stoney and Prunchius O'Mahony. Today's podcast was produced by Suzanne Brennan with JJ Vernon on sound. We'll be back next Wednesday. And until then, thanks for listening.